Today's year in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Pei Zayin. We're going to begin at the conclusion of the top Mishnah, about nine lines from the top, and Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. We're learning today, Le'ilui Nishmas, Maurice Lavor, Moshe Aaron ben Yehuda Halevi. We're also learning, Le'ilui Nishmas, Avram Yehuda ben Yona Yehuda, and Devorah Bas Yisrael. All the Nishmas we learn for should have an Aliyah from our learning. Okay, in the Mishnah yesterday, we went through what I call the ladder. We went up and down the ladder in terms of a woman who was originally, the first case was the Yisraelis who married a Kohen, then she married a Levi, then she married a Yisrael. Each time she had progeny, and we talked about the tragic situations where each time the husband died and then the progeny died, when did she return to her status of being able to eat Truma, the Yisraelis who was married to a Kohen. When she had progeny, she's allowed to eat still, even after her husband died. But when she married somebody else, we said that she no longer was able to eat as long as those people were alive. Then the second part of the Mishnah was the opposite case, the Bas Kohen, who married a Yisrael. So she's no longer allowed to eat Truma. She subsequently got married to a Levi, then subsequently got married to a Kohen. So again, with progeny each time, and what would be the halachic status each time when Nebuch, the husband, passed away and the child passed away. Won't go through the entire Mishnah again, but just to remind everybody. The Gemara starts off, again, 9 lines from the top, Pei Zayin Amud Aleph, with the situation of the case where the first part of the Mishnah, where it was a Yisraelis who married a Kohen initially, and then she married a Levi. So, Meiz Binami Levi. When we're dealing here, she's no longer married to the Levi. Nebuch the Levi passed away, and the Levi's child passed away as well. So, she's now having a child. Her only progeny left is from the Kohen that she married, the Yisraelis who married a Kohen. So, once again, Meiz Binami Levi, when the last progeny she had, the Yisrael's progeny passed away, the Levi progeny has passed away, so now she still has progeny left from her marriage to the Kohen. So once again, Tochal B'Truma. So how do we know all of this? This entire progression, this ladder that I'm referring to. How do we know that this is true? The Hodra Ochla Mishum Bina Minolan, that she can now re-go again and eat Truma for a period of time. She wasn't able to eat Truma, and now because she has surviving progeny from her first husband, the Kohen, she's allowed to go and again eat Truma Minolan. How do we know this? So Mora tells us, we have a famous pasuk. We've mentioned this pasuk in the past. It tells us, "Ubas Kohen kisi al mono grusha, bizera ein lo shava al bei savia kinureha milechem avia tochel." So this is the pasuk. We're going to deal a lot with this pasuk, and this pasuk has extra words in it. The previous pasuk, which we'll darshan in a moment as well, the previous pasuk, this pasuk Yud-Gimel, previous pasuk Yud Beis, tells us uvas kohen kisieli ish zor. When a bas kohen goes and marries a non kohen, then it tells us he bistrumas hakodoshim lo sochel. She's no longer able to go and eat truma because she's now married to Yisrael. Now that tells us that they're dealing over here with the Bas Kohen. So the next pasuk didn't need to start with the words Bas Kohen. So Rabbi Abba Amar Rav tells us from the extra vav there, it tells us instead of the word Bas Kohen, it says Uvas, that comes and connects it to the previous pasuk to teach us that she is able to go back and eat Truma once again. Kisiel Amona Ugrusha, since she's an Amona Ugrusha, in that situation, she can go back to eating Truma. Now, this would seem to only be in accord with one opinion. Come on, Rabbi Akiva, the Darshi Vavi. Rabbi Akiva is the one that's darshing Vavs throughout the Torah. So therefore, this would seem to be only in accord with him. The Chachamim who don't darshin Vav would seem to not agree with this extra drasha of U Vas Kohen. So Gemara says, no, Afilu Temer Rabbanon, the whole word U Vas Kohen was unnecessary. We were dealing with Pasuk Yubeis with U Vas Kohen, so it could have just started Kisial Mono Grusha. It didn't have to go and tell us U Vas Kohen. So even the Chachamim would hold that the entire word Kula Uvas Kroyaseiruhu, and therefore both the Chachamim and certainly Rabbi Akiva could darshan from the word U, from the Vav, or the whole statement Uvas Kohen that was unnecessary to teach us this day. Now the Gemara says, Tana Rabban, and we learned in the Braisa, and we learned this previously in the Masechta, Kishi Choseres, Nebuch, when the Kohen's daughter had married a Yisrael, or Levi, was no longer allowed to eat Truma, and now if she unfortunately loses her husband and she has no progeny from that Yisrael or that Levi, Choseres LeTruma. She goes back to her father's house, Shova El Beis Aviyah Kinureha, and the Pasuk says, Milechem Aviyah Tochel, so she goes back and eats Truma. The Eino Choseres, however, L'Chosev Yishok, the Matnas Kahuna that you get from a Korban Shlomim is allowed to be eaten by the entire family of the Kohen, not like the Chatos, which is only eaten by the Pirchei Kuhuna, or Mincha is only eaten by the Pirchei Kuhuna, the Oshim is only eaten by the Pirchei Kuhuna, only the male Kohanim. So the Chazeh and the Shok, which are a Matana of the breastbone area and the thigh. So this is allowed to be eaten by the Kohen's family. Anybody in his family is allowed to eat this, including his daughter. So therefore, when this daughter who had married a Yisrael or a Zar, a non-Kohen, Nebuch, she returns back to the father's house without any children when her husband passes away, so then she's allowed to go and eat truma again, but can't eat the chazei b'shok. And the Gemara is going to give us five different reasons as to why this is so. So the Gemara starts off and tells us, Amar chista, Amar ravina bar shila, maikra. What's the pasuk, the source of this? So he darshens as follows. The pasuk tells us, he mit trumas hakadoshim lo so chel. That's pasuk yukimu. Uvas kohen kisel izor, he bitrumas hakadoshim lo so chel. Now, it uses an extra word there, bitrumas hakadoshim. It says, Bamuram min hakodoshim lo sochel. It specifically adds the sex word, bitrumas hakodoshim, to teach us that which is separated from the kodshim, in other words, the chazeh and the tenufah. So there it says, lo sochel. She's not allowed to go and eat that. That's teretz number one. Teretz number two, Rav Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravua. Rav Nachman says the name of Rabba Baravua. Look at the pasuk. It says, Milechem, when it says in the previous pasuk Gimel, it says, Veshav Obey Savia Kinureha, Milechem Ovia Tochel. Now she goes back to eat the Lechem. In other words, Milechem below Kol Lechem. And not all the bread of her father's house. That's to go and exclude Prat Lechazei Veshok. Mi is always a miut. So mi lechem, from some of the lechem, in other words, from some of the entitlements that a Kohen's allowed to have, meaning the truma, but not all of the lechem, not the chazei and the shok. That's number two, Rav Nachman Amar Bar Ravua. On this, though, we have a question. Rami Rechama doesn't like this. He says, maybe this mi lechem, this miut, is coming to exclude something else. Maskela Rami Rechama, Ema Pratli Aforas the Dark. When it says that she goes back to her father's house, maybe it means that she doesn't go fully back, mi lechem, only in some ways does she go back, but when she was in her father's house, her father was able to go and do Haforas Nedarim. He could be made for her Nedarim. He could go and revoke any Nedarim that she did. She makes a nether. If the father hears of it, within that day, the day that he hears of it, if he revokes it, if he is made for the nether, so then in that situation, the nether is gone. So maybe this pasuk is telling us that she doesn't go back for that. The father no longer has the power to do Afaris Nadarim. So maybe that's what you need Milechem for, and it doesn't come to exclude the Chazei V'Shalk. So that's what Rami Rechama asks, but Rava says that's incorrect. Omar Rava, no, that din, that she doesn't go back to her father's house for Afaris Nadarim, that's already been taught. Kvar Paska, that's already been paskined on by the Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, from the Tana in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Shmuel. What did they say? It said as follows, the Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, they learned in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Shmuel, the Pasuk tells us, V'neider almana ugusha, and then the words are missing here, Kol Asher Asora, Al Nafsha Yakum Olel. So it says that the neder and Amon or Gerusha is Yakum Olel, will be, in fact, for her, it can't be revoked. Now, why would we think it could be revoked? Matam Lomar. Balo Mutzo Miklalav, she's no longer a child of her father because she got married. And Umutzo Miklalav, and Nebuch, she's no longer married because she's an Amon or a Gerusha, so she doesn't have a husband. So she left her father's domain, and she unfortunately is no longer in her husband's domain, so of course nobody can go and do Hafaris Adarm on her. Only a father or a husband can do the Hafaris Adarm of the wife or the woman. So obviously the pasuk must be Milchadish something, Ella. So they learn in the Tanya de Rabbi Shmuel, they said, Ella, it comes to teach us, Harei Shemosar Av L'Shluchei HaBaal, if the father handed her over to the Shluchim of the Baal, so they had the first stage of marriage, and now he's giving it over to her for the second stage of marriage, and the father hands over his daughter to the Shluchei HaBaal. They live in a different city, so he handed over his daughter to go travel with them. So that leaves the father's Rishos, or likewise, O Shemosar Shluchei Av L'Shluchei HaBaal, or the father sent her with his Shluchim, but now his Shluchim handed her over to the Shluchim of the Baal. In this situation, she's left her father's house. But Nebuch, she never has the second level of Kedushin. The Nebuch, the husband, either passed away or divorced her before they had the second stage of Kedushin. So, how do we refer to this lady in this situation? Beis Avia Shelzo, O Beis Bala Shelzo. Is she still in her father's domain, or is she considered having entered into the husband's domain? Elo, Lo Malachot comes to teach us, Kivan Shiotso Shoach, Yishusa'ab. This pasuk comes to teach us that as soon as she leaves the father's Rishos, either the father handed her over to the Shluchei HaBaal, or the father's Shlichim handed her over to the Shluchei HaBaal, then she's no longer considered in the father's domain, and then she was in the husband's domain, albeit when they're not yet fully married, they're really in both domains, but in this situation, Shuv Einu Yochel Hofer, so she's left the father's domain. That's what this pasuk teaches us. So even if she returns back to the father's domain with the death of her husband, the father can no longer be mefer her nedarim. So therefore, I already know that, and therefore, Rami Bar Chama's question on the second opinion, which was the opinion of Rav Nachman, Amar Rabbi Ravua, that we learn out the miyat milechem to come to exclude the chazi v'shalk. So Rava says that's still a very good teretz, and Rami Bar Chama's question falls aside. Okay, that's teretz number two. Now we go to teretz number three. Rasaf Amar milechem oviyah tochal. The pasuk says lechem oviyah, lechem v'lo basar. So the actual words of the pasuk teach us this drasha straightforward. It says truma lechem, you're allowed to go back and eat in the father's house, but that excludes the chazi v'shalk. That's teretz number three, straightforward, very simple. Teretz number four, Rapapa. Rapapa mar milechem aviyah tochel. He also dashes this word, lechem hakonoi liaviyah. This means lechem that was owned by her father. The truma is owned by the Kohen. As opposed to prat lechaz v'shalk, the mishulchan gavoa kozachu. As opposed to the chazei v'shalk, while yes, he has the rights to use them, to feed them to his family, nevertheless, he's not considered as if he owns them. They're still considered Shulchan Gavoa. They belong, so to say, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not to the Kohanim, who get the Chazei V'Shok as a Matana. And therefore, that's what it means. From the Lechem that her father owns, i.e. Truma, she's allowed to go back, Shova El Beisaviyah Kinurel. But for the things that the father doesn't own, but he has certain rights in them, such as the Chazei V'Shok, she doesn't go back to them. That's Teretz number four, Rav Papa. Teretz number five, Rava. Rava himself gives the following teretz. Rava Amar, the pasuk tells us, Veitz chazei ha-tnufa, veishok ha-tshuma, tochilu. Now, that's all that we have, but the rest of the pasuk then fills in. B'makom tohar, ata uvanecha, uvnosecha itach. Then we have this part of the pasuk. Bizman sheitach. And Rava learns this out to teach us that when she is with you, in other words, before she got married to somebody else, so then she's considered with you, unosecha itach, so then she's allowed to eat the chazei hatnufa v'shok hatruma. Only in those situations when she's itach, but when she's not itach, in other words, when she left the house, got married, nevach, then her husband died, and she returns to the house, so she doesn't return for chazei and shok. So these are five reasons why we dash in this dinah. Okay. Mark Adina says, Amar Rav Ad Bar Abba, we learned in the following braisa, Tana, and she chozeres lebeis aviyah. When she returns lebeis aviyah, chozeres lechuma. She again gets to eat the truma. Ve'eno chozeres lechozer v'shok. But she doesn't get to eat the chazei ha'tufa v'shok ha'truma, as we just gave five reasons for. So this braisa that Rav Ad Bar Abba brings down right now tells us nothing new than what we learned in the Tanur Rabbanan a minute before. But here the braisa adds on, and the braisa says, bishvil binah. But when she is allowed, like in our Mishnah, where she said originally she lost the rights to eat because of her child when she was married to the Kohen, she had progeny, but then she married a lady after her husband died, so now she's no longer allowed to eat the truma or the chazei hatnufa v'shoka truma. But now, when the lady dies, and any progeny she had for the lady dies, and she returns to having a child progeny from the Kohen, so now when she returns, this mother of the Kohen, bishvil binah, chozeres af l'chaz v'shok. So here we see a distinction. This braisa tells us that when the daughter herself, the Bas Kohen, returns lebeis aviyah, so she only gets the truma, but not the chazei v'shok. But when this mother of the Kohen, she was the Yisraelis, and her marriage to the Kohen resulted in progeny that's a Kohen, so even when her husband dies, and even if she then married a Levi Yisrael, as our Mishnah had said, and she lost temporarily the rights because of her child to eat truma, but then if, in fact, her new husband and any progeny for the new husbands that she had all pass away, so then she returns to the right to eat truma because of her child. But it's not only truma that she returns to in this situation. The mother of this Kohen child or Kohenist child or even grandchildren that come from them, any progeny that she has from her husband, the Kohen, in this situation, she returns to eating truma as well as the chazei hatinufa v'shok hatruma. Now, also Rav Mordechai, Amro l'shmaisa kamei de Rav Ashi. Rav Mordechai said over this, what I just taught, it's this braisa from Rav Ad Bar Abba, and he said as follows, Omar, mehecha komis ravya. How do we know over here that, somewhat paradoxically, the Bas Kohen herself, who intrinsically was allowed to eat truma because of who she was born to a Kohen. So she, when she returns, Shavel Beisavir Kinurel, she is only allowed to go and return to eat truma, and for the five reasons that we said, doesn't go back and eat the chazei hatinufa v'shok hatruma, as opposed to the mother of a Kohen, who was the Israelis, who never had the right to eat truma until she married the Kohen, then was allowed to go and eat truma, or if she subsequently has progeny from him, and even the Kohen dies, she's still allowed to eat truma. she also was allowed to eat the shok hatruma v'chasei hatnufa. How come? It seems to be a paradox that the source herself, the bas kohen, can't return to eat the chazei and the shok, but the mother, who never previously was allowed to, when she is returned in her unusual situation because of the deaths of other husbands and other progeny, she does return to chazei hatnufa v'shok hatruma. And he explains his paradox as the question. He says, the whole drosha that we learned out that she's allowed to go back is from the uvas, mi uvas. It tells us that the kohen daughter is allowed to go back. And that's the source that we know that you go back. Shava beis avir kinu rao. So, mi adifa lo mina. Why should the source itself, the bas kohen, that's the source of this din, not return to chazei of the shok, as opposed to the one that we learned out through a drasha, that the progeny of the kohen still entitled to her again to go back and eat truma, that is in fact allowed to go back and also eat the chazei and the shok. So the Gemara says, no, very simple teretz. Because when it talks about the bas kohen, the daughter who was originally a kohen, when she returns, so the psukim tell us, no, we had five drashas as to why she can't go back and eat the chazei katnufa and shok hatruma. But for the mother of the kohen, when her other husbands and progeny pass away, so she returns. There are no miyutim over there. It doesn't say milechem avia tochel. It doesn't have any of the miyutim, and therefore we actually have miyutim telling us that the bas kohen doesn't go back for the chazei and the shok, but the mother of the kohen, because of her progeny that are from the kohen, she does go back, and there's no reason to think that she shouldn't go back for everything because there's no miyut from the psukim. Okay, now we continue. We quote the Mishnah. Again, up and down the ladder, the Mishnah taught us, Bas Kohen Shnisas Yisroel V'chulei. This was the second part of the Mishnah. We talked about that if the Bas Kohen married Yisroel, in that situation, as long as she has progeny from Yisroel, even if Yisroel dies, she doesn't return back to her father's house, same thing to Levi, we said, etc. Now, I have a sheet that will be attached to the YU Torah shear, and for those that have any trouble, you just have to look for the download of the attachment, and you'll be able to see the sheet. It will make, for the little bit that we use the sheet, it's not a very long sheet, but for the little bit that we use the sheet, right now, I think it will make it very, very clear. Otherwise, it's a little bit complicated, but with a picture in front of you, it will make it very, very easy to understand. So, Tana Rabbana, we learn the following brisa. We just learned the psukim over and over again. This is Pasuk Yugimel, Perichot Beis, in Vayikra, Vishava El Beis Avia, Kinurel. So we dash in the first part, Vishava El Beis Avia, Prat L'Shomeres Yovam. That comes to exclude that the woman doesn't go back to her father's house if she is waiting to have Yibum done. So she died childless, obviously. So she goes back to her father's house after the chalitz is done. If, first of all, if he does Yibum, so obviously she doesn't go back to her father's house. She now is married again to a Yisrael. But if he gives a chalitza, so then only after the chalitza does she go back to her father's house. But while she's awaiting to have Yibum done, or chalitza, so then, prat l'shomeres yavim, while she's shomeres yavim, she doesn't yet eat truma back in her father's house. That's the first part of the pasuk. Shavu beis avia has to be that she's fully returned to her father's house, and not that she's waiting for Yibum. And then the pasuk said, kinurel, she has to go back the same way that she left, same way that when she left her father's house, she wasn't pregnant, so she can't go back to her father's house when she's pregnant. She has to wait till the pregnancy is done. If she's giving birth to a Yisrael, so then, in fact, she's not going back to her father's house. Nebuch, if she miscarries, or the child were to die, then she would eventually go back to her father's house. But while she's pregnant, and certainly if she has children, she doesn't go back to her father's house. So the Gemara says, we darshan this from the words, Rishava al bisavia kinurel. So the last thing that we said, Prat l'muberes, the Gemara says, why do I need a pasuk to teach you that? Bahalo dinhu, it's a kavu chomer. What's the kavu chomer? Now, here's where you'll use my diagram. The top diagram on the sheet that I handed out illustrates over here that the woman that we're referring to, we'll call her Rachel, went and married Reuven. And she died, Reuven dies, but she did have a child. That's called Vlad Min HaRishon. So she had a child. So there's no Yibum considerations over here. She has a child from Reuven. Reuven is husband number one in the diagram, and that's Vlad Min HaRishon. The woman's now a widow. She's an Amona, and she marries Shimon, unrelated to Reuven. She marries husband number two. She marries Shimon. And then Nebuch, husband number two, dies. But husband number two, Shimon has a brother, Levi. So now she's a Shomeris Yavam waiting to be married to Levi. But she's pregnant. So this woman is childless from husband number two, but she had a child from husband number one. So the Gemara tells us this is the Kavachomer. In regards to doing Yibam with Shimon, husband number two's brother, we'll call him Levi. If you have a situation where she falls Yibam to husband number two's brother, Shimon dies, so she falls Yibam to husband number two, Shimon's brother, Levi. In that situation, we don't say,
the fact that she had children from her first husband, number one, Reuven, that's irrelevant.
We certainly don't say that her child from Reuven, husband number one, in any way potters her from Yibam, from husband number two. The fact that she has a child is irrelevant. The fact that the husband number two has no children with her, that's the only thing that counts.
So in this situation,
we don't consider the Vlad from Reuven, husband number one, to in any way be relevant to the fact that she should be exempt from Yibam, from husband number two. Vlad min Harishon, we don't say, is Kivlad min Hasheni, Lepotra min Yibam, to exempt her from having to have Yibam done to her. And nevertheless, if she was pregnant, that's what I have the question mark, Ibor.
Also, Ubor Kiolid, if she were pregnant, then we would exempt her from undergoing Yibam to the brother of husband number two, what we're calling husband number two, Shimon, Shimon's brother, Levi.
So she is in that situation. Also, Ubar, we consider the pregnancy over here to exempt her from Yibam, unless the pregnancy miscarries. But right now, we consider that she's exempt from Yibam.
So in this situation, diagram number one, we say that she can't do Yibam if she's pregnant. You have to wait to see what the outcome of the pregnancy will be.
So certainly, now we go to diagram number two, Malkum shall also vlab in Arishon kivlab in Hasheni. In a situation where we do take into account dead husband number one's child, the Vlad bin Arishon, we do take that into account in a situation where the woman was a Bas Kohen and she married husband number one and she has a Vlad from husband number one. So in this situation, when she marries husband number two as an Amana, she marries husband number two. So Malkum Sha'asa Vlad bin Arishon Kivlad bin Hasheni, that doesn't entitle her to go and eat Truma with husband number two, even though she has a Vlad from the Kohen, but nevertheless, when she's with husband number two, she certainly can't eat Truma. But even after husband number two dies, so she's a Shomeris Yavam, waiting to be have Yibum Machalitza with husband number two's brother. Again, husband number two will call Shimon, and his brother will call Levi, unrelated, but neither of these two are related to Reuven, husband number one. So in this situation, Malkum Sha'asa Vlad bin Arishon Kivlad bin Hasheni Leposlam in Truma, she's not allowed to go and eat Truma. The marriage to husband number two exempts her from eating Truma, and now when she falls Yibam, so she would still not be allowed to go and eat Truma until the Yibam of Chalitza is done. If the Yibam was done, then she certainly can't eat Truma because now married to Yisrael. But if Chalitza is done, then she would be allowed to go and return to eating Truma because of the Vlad min Arishon. But in this situation, the fact that she is away to Yibam, Shomeris Yavam, prevents her from going back to eating Truma because of Vlad min Arishon. So certainly, Eino din shenasa ubar kilod. So certainly in this situation, if she has a pregnancy, so it certainly should prevent her from going back to eating truma because of the Vlad min Harishon. So this is what the Gemara is telling us over here. This is the Kal v'chomer. If in this situation, well, we do take into account the Vlad min Harishon, so certainly nasa ubar kilod. So it should be a Kal v'chomer that we take into account the ubar. If in the first situation we don't take into account the Vlad bin Arishon, we say that the ubar is considered taken into account also ubar kiyilud. We make the ubar as if it was born. So certainly in this second scenario, where we do take into account the Vlad bin Arishon, that this Vlad, she was a Bas Kohen married to Yisrael, this Vlad prevents her from returning to Beis Avia to go and eat back truma because she has progeny from the Yisrael. So certainly in this situation where we do take into account the Vlad bin Arishon, we certainly should say Nasu Uber Ki Yilud, and therefore it was unnecessary to have the Shavu Beis Avia Kinureha, the Drasha Kinureha, is Prat Muberes. That's an unnecessary Drasha. We don't need it. That's the Gemara's question. Again, it's a little bit complicated. I hope I said it clearly. I'll just review it one more time real quickly. In the first situation, where we do not take into account lo asa vlad bin Arishon kivlad bin Hasheni in regards to Yibam, the first husband number one's child is irrelevant in terms of Yibam to
the brother of husband number two when he passes away. And yet in that situation, if she's pregnant, we do take into account. So certainly in the case where this Bas Kohen married Yisrael, so the Vlad Ben Arishon is going to always prevent her from eating Truma, returning to Beis Aviyah, even after husband number two passes away. So she doesn't go back to Beis Aviyah, but because of the Vlad Ben Arishon, we take that into account. So we do take into account the Vlad Ben Arishon. So certainly then, if she's pregnant, that should exempt her from having Yibam until the pregnancy is over. So Nasa Uber Ki'ilud, it should be a Kal V'chomer. So why do I need the Pasuk Kinu Re'ah? Someone says, no, that's not a good argument. Why? Mali Asa Uber Ki'olud Inyun Yibam. In regards to Yibam, we say that the Ubar is considered as if it was a born child and prevents her from having to undergo Yibam Machalitza until the pregnancy is determined to be a live pregnancy or Nebuch she miscarries. Why is that? Shari also Mesim Kichayim. Because in that situation, let's say this woman, Rachel, had in fact a child with Shimon, husband number two. And then Shimon passes away. And then subsequent to that, her child passes away. We don't make her go back and now have Yibam Machalitza from her dead husband, Shimon, husband number two's brother, Levi. We don't make her go back and have Yibam in that situation because at the time that Shimon died, she had a child. So this child, Shari also Mesim Kechayim, we always consider that child to prevent her from needing Yibam Machalitza, even if that child dies. So we make Mesim, Nebuch, if that child dies, we consider him still as Chayim. And then 5 years later, say, oh, Nebuch, the child died. Now you have to go undergo Yibam Machalitza. So in this situation, when we make Mesim Kechayim, Nasa Uber Kiyodu Lidin Truma, in that situation where a dead child who dies after husband number two dies is considered like he's alive, so certainly an Uber is considered at that point in time to prevent her from needing to undergo Yibam because of this concept of Mesim Kechayim. However, in a situation, Shiloh also Mesim Kechayim, in the scenario where she was once married to, this Bas Kohen was once married to a Yisrael, husband number one, and they have a child, the Vlad Ben Arishon, that prevents her from eating Truma. But when that child dies, so then she does go back. We don't say, Mesim Kichayim. We don't say, well, you once had a child from him, that's it. No, you look at it, does he have a child right now? So therefore, in a situation, she'll also Mesim Kichayim, who says necessarily that you would make the Nasa Uber Ki Yilud, and therefore you do need the word, Talmud Lomar Ki Nureha, Prat Nubera. So you do need the word Ki Nureha to teach us this din. Okay, I suggest you look at my diagram. If you didn't follow this the first time, go through the diagram. I bring all the discussion out step by step. Mi'etz Hashem, you'll be able to understand this sugya if you didn't. If not, we're going to go weiter anyway. Nemara says, V'yitzruch l'michtav mu'beres. We needed this drasha of kinureha to be prat l'mu'beres. And we also needed another drasha, V'yitzruch l'michtav v'zera ein la. Another pasuk tells us that the woman has no child, as opposed to if she once had a child. So why do we need both of these psukim? You need the words kinureha to exclude the woman's mubaris, and you need the words v'zera ein la. Only then does she go back to Beis Aviyah kinureha, to her father's household, and is able to eat truma again. But if she did have a child, so then she doesn't go back. So why do we need both psukim? So the Gemara says, because of Rechmana v'zera ein la. If I only had the pasuk v'zera ein la, that if she ever had a child, so then she doesn't go back to her father's house to eat truma. The reasoning is because Meikara Chad Gufa Vashta Trey Gufe. The reason why she doesn't go back to eat truma in that situation is because when she left the father's house, she was one guf, and now she's returning to her father's house, she's two gufim. She has her own guf, and she has this child from the Yisrael husband that she married. That's why she's going back different than when she left. However, Abu Mubarez, if she was pregnant, one could argue the Meikara Chad Gufa Vashta Chad Gufa, that when she left her father's house, she was one person, and now she's returning to her father's house, albeit pregnant, she's still one person. So therefore, I would have said that the pregnant woman is allowed to go and eat truma back to her father's house, even though she's pregnant from the Yisrael. Eimar, I therefore would have said, Tochel, that she's allowed to go and eat. Therefore, Tzricha, you need to tell me the Pasuk Kinurea to tell me Prat Lu Uberes. No, so just tell me that Pasuk, because of Rechmanim Uberes. If you just tell me Kinurea to Prat Lu Uberes, so I would have said, you know why? The Meikara Gufa, when she left her father's house, she was a single Guf, and we turn to Peizayin Amid Beis. She was Srika, she was empty, Rashi says, Lashon of Reka, Vahashta Gufamaya, and now she's a filled body. So therefore, even though it's one guf, but it was an empty guf, and now it's a full guf. So that's why you need the pasuk to tell me that, to exclude the pregnant woman. How about Zera ain't law? If in the pasuk Zera ain't law, when she left the father's house, the Meikara Gufa Srika, Vahashta Gufa Srika, and now she's also returning with an empty body, albeit she has a child. but she's returning with an empty body. So therefore, I might have said in this situation that she's returning the way that she left. To make her a gufa srika, v'ashe gufa srika, emolo, that maybe she is allowed to go and eat truma, even though she has a child from the Yisrael. Therefore, tzricha, you have to tell me, v'zera ein lo. Okay, now, from here till the end of the perek, we're going to have four different kal v'chomers to try to go and understand fully the drushes that we learned in the Mishnah. So we have a simon over here. The simon is simon omar le lo naaseh. Now we have the next word maasoya, but in the Gemara it will be the naaseh b'misa naaseh v'lo naaseh b'vlad, and then yibum utruma and yibum utruma, and this is a simon. Again, it's always important to say these simonim. It's a school to say these simonim, and they used to make these simonim because they were doing this all by heart, and it made it a lot easier if they made these simonim. So the Gemara starts off as follows. Amalei Rav Yehuda midi Iskarta. Rav Yehuda came from a place known as Iskarta, said to Rava, L'Rava, Lo nasa meisim kechayim. We don't make the equivalence between a dead child and a live child, linyan yibum mikavuchomer, in regards to yibum from the following kavuchomer. In other words, the fact that a child had been born, and therefore Yibum was not done, if that child dies, we don't say that we view that dead child as still being alive. And therefore, there should be a requirement of Yibum. In this situation, where we made the child, the Vlad Min Arishon, please refer to the handout from today, what that means again, Vlad Min Arishon, what we say, we do consider that child still around from the first husband to exempt the woman still from being able to eat truma, even though her second husband has passed away. Yet in that situation, we don't make mesim kachayim. We don't say that if the child had died from the first husband, that we still consider him alive. So certainly, certainly in a situation where we don't include the first child, the Vlad Bin Arishon, to be considered in any way to prevent Yibam, so certainly, in that situation, we shouldn't say that a deceased child, a dead child, should be considered like a live child. So therefore, we should have to go and do Yibam 5 years later, even though at the time of the death of the husband, there was a child, but now Nebuchadnezzar, the child died. They should have to do Yibam 5 years later. There should be a Kavu Chomer that we just said. So we shouldn't include the dead child as if he was still alive, and therefore there is no child born to that family. Nebuchadnezzar, the child died, and there should have to be Yibam 5 years later. No, the reason why we don't apply that Kavu Chomer is because the Torah's ways are very beautiful. They're very pleasant. And Rachmona Litzlan, if 5 years later this woman is married to somebody else, and then her first husband, the child that she had from that first husband, now passed away. Now, retrospectively, you'd say she'd have to undergo chalitza while she's a married woman. That's not nice. And therefore, all the pathways of the Torah are beautiful and pleasant and peaceful, and therefore, that can't be the din. Then, let's try another kavachomer. We should say, we should say that the mesim, the dead child, should be considered as if he's still alive in regards to truma. So, she shouldn't be allowed to go back and return to Beis Avia if she once had a child, even though the child now is not alive, from the following Kavachomer. In this situation, we said that the Vlad Bin Arishon has no impact whatsoever on the requirement to have Yibam or Chalitza when her second husband dies and they have no children from the second husband, so we don't include the child from the first husband in any way. And nevertheless, also Mesim Kechayim. In that situation, we do make Mesim Kechayim. We do say that if, in fact, she had a child, that child, even if he dies, also mesim kachayim, as if he's still alive, there is no requirement for yibum. So certainly, mokom, she also vlab in a rishon, kevlab in a shein, leposim in a truma. In the situation where she did have a child from the first husband, she's a bas kohen married to that first husband, so she has progeny from the Yisrael. So we still consider that, in that situation, that she's not allowed to go return to the base of via to eat truma, because she has the progeny from the first husband, even when the second husband dies. So certainly, ain't no din, should be a kavachomer, should not say mesim kachayim, so we should allow, in this situation, the dead child to be considered still alive in this regard, and she shouldn't be allowed to go back to the base of via if she once ever had a child from that Yisrael. Tamad lomer, v'zer ain't law, v'ha ain't law. You go look to see, does she have a child right now? Is there a living child now? Then she can't go back. But if there once was a living child, but never that child died, then that's called zera ain't law. Her ain't law, she doesn't have, and therefore this kavachomer doesn't apply. Then the Gemara says, "V'nasev labin arishon kivlabin ashen linyan yibum mikavachomer." We should say that the child from the first marriage, the vlabin arishon, should in fact ruin the need exempt her from needing to have Yibum Chalitza from the second husband. Why is that? In a situation where the Torah did not make the dead child to be like the live child, for example, in Truma, we say that just because the child was once alive, Nebuch, the child died, the woman does go back to the base of Iya. So in that situation, we say, also Vlabin Arishon Kiv Vlabin Hasheni. We do say that the child that she had from her first husband is considered in regards to the second husband, even though the second husband died, that child from the first husband still prevents her from going back to eating truma. So certainly, Malkum Shasa Mesim Chayim, in a place where we do make the Mesim to be Chayim, Nebuchadnezzar, the child died, we do consider that that woman doesn't have to undergo Yibam retroactively. Linyan Yibam, that we don't say, well, she had a child at the time of her husband Shimon's death, and now 5 years later the child died, that she has to undergo Yibam. We just said we don't do that. So certainly, Enudin Shanasa Vlabin Arishon Kavlabin Hasheni. So then in that situation, should be a Kavachomer that the child from the first husband should exempt her from Yibam from the second husband, even though she died childless with the second husband, but she has a child from the first husband. So this Kavachomer would say that she shouldn't undergo Yibam. So Gemara says, no, Talmud Lomer, this Kavachomer is incorrect. Uvein ain lo. When the pasuk says he doesn't have a child, v'ho ain lo. And in fact, he doesn't have a child. The fact that she has a child, this kav v'chomer doesn't work. Finally, the last kav v'chomer that we're going to try to make. V'lo nasev laben arishon k'v'laben hasheni l'truma mikav v'chomer. We should say no, that the child that was from the first husband, the v'laben arishon, shouldn't ruin it from going back l'beis avia when the second husband dies. It should be kav v'chomer as follows. When we do make the dead child as if he was a live child, in regards to the din of Yibam, the poachman of Yibam, so if she once had a child at the time of her husband Shimon's death, so then even though that child may die years later, we don't make her go back and require chalitza. So lo also vlab in arishon kivlab in hasheni, we don't consider the child in that situation from the first husband in any way to exempt her from the second husband. So certainly, makom shelo also makes some chayim, in a place where we don't make the dead child like the live child, for example, in Yintruma, there we say that if she did have a child, so while she has a child, she doesn't return to the base of Iyah. But if that child never died from the first husband, she does go back to the base of Iyah. So in this situation, shouldn't it be a kavachomer even then? Shalona sevlab in arishon kavlab in hasheni. So then we shouldn't make the child from the first husband to ruin it from going back to eating chumba when her second husband dies. So Gemara says, no. Again, the pasuk tells us not to use this kavachomer, tamalomer, ain law. If she doesn't have children, then choseres lebeis aviyah. However, v'hoyeshla, if she does have children from the first husband, then she doesn't go back lebeis aviyah. Now, these four kavachomers, I understand, were a little bit difficult maybe to follow along. I hope it was clear. Use the handout that I gave to remind yourself what it always means, v'lab min arishon, v'lab min hasheni, and what we're talking about in terms of meisim kechayim, and be'ezes Hashem, the chazara will be good. So, this concludes the beautiful ninth perek, hadron lecha yesh mutaros, hadron lecha yesh mutaros, hadron lecha yesh mutaros. And we start the beautiful tenth perek. Tosos first points out that the reason why this perek is here is it because we just talked about in the previous perek that certain women are forbidden to eat truma and meiser, so we continue in that general discussion because we're going to mention that certain women are going to be forbidden to eat truma and meiser. Okay, the Mishnah begins. Ha'isha shaholach balo l'medina sayam. A woman's husband goes on a business trip, he goes overseas, and they unfortunately come back and tell her, Ubo, Rashi points out, we're dealing here with Eid Echod, as the Gemara is going to prove. A single witness comes, Ubo v'amrula meis balech. And the single witness comes and tells her that your husband died. The reason why it says in the plural, Lashem Ubo v'yamru, is because it's talking about in general this type of a din. So they tell her husband died, and as Rashi points out, a woman in this situation would normally be very careful. Daika, she will go check out Adiyada Bikushta, that she knows for certain that this report was true, and then Uminsava, and only afterwards would go get married. And in short, we call this Daika Uminsava, Isha Daika Uminsava. So the woman will definitely check it out and only get married if she's assured that her husband Nebuch really has died. And then she goes, Venisis, and she gets married. And then, Baruch Hashem, her husband's alive. He's not dead. But she's in a real pickle here. She's in a real quandary. So what does she do? The Mishnah tells us, Teitze mizeh umizeh. She's not allowed to stay married to the first husband, and she's not allowed to stay married to the second husband. Now, the marriage to the second husband actually never really halachically took effect because her first husband was still alive. The married woman can't accept kiddushin. But, as Rashi points out, we consider her like an eishes ish shazinsa, even though she didn't willfully go and commit adultery here, but the bottom line is she didn't check it out well enough. And the Chazal basically put a knas on her and said that you're not allowed to stay living with your first husband, and the marriage to the second husband is never really a marriage. It's null and void. And therefore, when her husband comes back, she has to leave her first husband, and she's not allowed to stay married to a second husband, even after the first husband gives her a get, because she is usher to that second husband, just like any woman would be usher to the adulterous man that she had a relationship with. Again, even though this woman did nothing arguably intentionally wrong, but she didn't check it out well enough. The Mishnah continues and tells us, not only takes him mizeh, but tzricha get mizeh mizeh. She doesn't walk out scot-free. She's midaraisa, still married to her first husband. So while he's not allowed to stay living with her, he is required to give her a get in order for her to be able to go and marry theoretically somebody else. And we meet the rabbanan and make her get a get from the second husband, because even though it's not really a husband, there was no marriage there, but people are going to mistakenly think, hey, first husband gave her a get, so the marriage to the second husband is chal, and therefore she's just walking away without requiring a get, and that would be a potential takola for people to think that, and therefore we meet the rabbanim required to get a get from both the second husband and the first husband, deraisa, she's required to get a get. Vein lo ksuba, she's not entitled to ksuba according to the Tana of our Mishnah, the Tana Kama of our Mishnah. He says that the first husband doesn't have to give her ksuba, even though midaraisa she was entitled to her ksuba, but since we halachically view her as zinsa, so she lost the ksuba. And of course, she has no ksuba from the second husband because there really never was a marriage. Below peros, she's not entitled to go back and get any of the peros that either the first or the second husband ate while she was married to them. She's not entitled to get those peros back, even though we say that she's not married to them. Below mazonos, and she's not entitled to get mazonos. Obviously, this is so because we're going to force them to divorce her. So what does it mean she doesn't get mizonos? So Rashi points out, and we had this in the previous parak, that we're dealing here with mizonos, that if she was love, so the ochla, that if she went and borrowed money while her husband was away, so those funds that normally the husband would be responsible for, in this situation, he doesn't have to pay for. For lo blos, this, according to most, is dealing with if there was nechse tzom barzel, so she's not even entitled not only to get the value of the nechse tzom barzel, but she doesn't even get whatever is extant left, according to some, of the nirsei tzom barzel. And this is true lo al zeh, v'lo al zeh. Not from the first husband, and not from the second husband, all of these dinim apply. V'im not lo mizeh mizeh, and if in fact she did take something from them that she wasn't entitled to, tasir, she has to go give it back. They have the right to halachically demand that she give it back. Furthermore, in this situation, v'avlad mamzer mizeh mizeh. Now, midaraisa, the children from the second husband, on mamzerim, because she's still an aishas ish to the first husband. But any children she has subsequently with the first husband, it's talking about subsequently, not talking about the previous children, but any children that she would subsequently have with her second husband would be mamzerim midarabanan, but not mamzer midaraisa, because she's technically still married midaraisa to her first husband. Furthermore, below zeh, vizeh, mitamila. If the husbands, either the first or the second husband, are kohanim, they're not allowed to go be mitami to her. This is not one of the seven relatives that a Kohen is allowed to be mitami to, because midaraisa, she's not allowed to stay married to the first husband, so therefore the first husband can't marry her, and the second husband is not really married to her, so therefore there is no halachic right for him to be mitami to her as a wife. Furthermore, below zeh, vizeh, zakoyim, lo b'mitziyasa, lo b'masiyadeh. Neither of them, the first or the second husband, is entitled to what normally the husband would be entitled to, anything that she finds, or her handiwork. That's part of the tzai of the ksuba, that the husband supports her, so therefore he's entitled to her mitzios or ma'asiyadeh. But here he's not supporting her, and therefore he's not entitled to, neither the first or the second husband, is entitled to her mitzios or ma'asiyadeh. This is all according to our Tana Kama. Likewise, v'lo b'afaris and the rel. Neither the first, and certainly not the second husband, can be made for a nedar. First, even though midaraisa he's still married to her, he can't do this because he's supposed to divorce her, so he's lost the right to go be made for a nedar. The second husband never really is her husband, so he can't be made for a nedar. Likewise, ha'isa bas Yisrael, if she was a bas Yisrael, so now she's no longer going to be able to marry a kohen. Nivsala mina kahuna. Now, the same thing would apply if she was a bas kohen or a bas levi as well. But it mentions over here, nivsala mina kahuna, she's not allowed to go marry a kohen. Ubas levi min ha-maiser. If she was a bas levi, according to her mayor, she's allowed to eat maiser rishon, but this would be postling her from eating maiser rishon. If she was a bas kohen, mina truma. Likewise, she's a bas kohen, she can't go and eat truma anymore. She's considered a zona and no longer is eligible to eat truma, even mi beis avia. Furthermore, vein yorshin shozev, yorshin shozev, yorshin esk subosa. Neither the yorshin of the first husband
nor the Yerushim of the second husband would be entitled to go collect the Ksuba. And the obvious question is, which Rashi points out, he says, the Gemara Parak, the Gemara is going to question, Ksuba Mayi, which just says she's not entitled to Ksuba, so how could they inherit something from her, or even have a Havimina to inherit something from her that she didn't get? So the Gemara will explain this, as will many of the other things in the Mishnah that I'm just really reading the words right now. The Gemara will go in more detail. Likewise, the Amei Su, if both the first and the second husband died without having children, so she would normally be required to fall in Yibam, certainly to the first husband on a Darais level. So, Achiv Shozeh, the Achiv Shozeh, Cholzev Lomiyabin. According to the Tana of Amishna, Tanakam of Amishna, she's not allowed to go and do Yibam with either the first or the second husband's brothers, but she's required to do Chalitza, Midar Rais from the first husband, and Midar Abanim from the second husband, again, because it would look bad that people would think that, oh, she went out of that marriage without doing Yibam with Chalitza. So, therefore, we make them do Chalitza, both the first husband, Midar Rais, and the second husband, Midar Abanim. This is the opinion of the Tanakam of Amishna. He said a lot of details, and some of which now will be disputed by various other Tanoim. So the first one is Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi Omer, Ksubas al Nirsi Bala Rishon. Rav Yossi disagrees, and he says, she's entitled to Ksuba Daraisa. She didn't Mizana intentionally, and therefore she's entitled to her Ksuba, and that Ksuba is from the first husband. She has nothing from the second husband, because that marriage never really took off. Second machlokes is from Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar Omer, he says, Harishon zaka b'mitziyosu v'masi adel, v'afaris n'dareh. These things are entitlements that the husband has. Now, he wasn't mizana, so he shouldn't lose these entitlements just because she was mizana. Again, we're using the term mizana, not that she's a bad woman, and not that she is a licentious, promiscuous woman. It's just that she did not adequately do daiko mintzvah, and therefore that's the knas. The rabbi said, if you do daiko mintzvah, then you can get married, but remember, you're taking a chance, so you better do daiko mintzvah well, and if you don't, then there's going to be these knasos. So therefore, the knas is on her, and Rabbi Elazar says, it's not on the husband. The husband, therefore, is still entitled to her mitzios, her ma'isiyodeh, and he has the right to be made for a nedarim if it impacts him. Another machlokist with the Tanakhama is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Biyasa Ochalitzasa Me Ochal Shorishon Boteres Sarasa. He allows, as we'll see in the Gemara, even Lichatchila for the brothers, if the first husband dies, so there were no children, so the brothers can Lichatchila do Yibum Chalitza, and in fact, if they do Yibum Chalitza with her, if there are any other co-wives that the dead husband has, so they're also potter via this Yibum Ochalitza. And the Gemara will explain what this machlokist actually is. Furthermore, the Mishnah continues, v'imnises shelo birishus. Now, it uses this language, shelo birishus, over here, to imply that she didn't require the Beis Din to tell her to do so. So this is a code word, essentially, for the fact that there are two Edim. So if there are two Edim, so that's throughout the Torah. Two Edim, they determine, or they essentially state what the facts are, and you don't need to go to court. So therefore, if she got married, shelo birishus, in other words, she didn't have to go to the court with the one witness to say, yes, you're allowed to go get married, daiko mintzvah, but check it out real well. So here, there were two witnesses, Nebuch, that said that her husband died, but they were wrong. So then in this situation, muteris lasolo. So here, she is considered a full shogeg, and she's not considered a zona, and she goes back to her husband. Rashi points out that she's not considered an ones, because she still should have checked it out, even though there were two witnesses, but here she's definitely a shogeg, and therefore can go back to her husband. As long as her husband's not a Kohen, she can go back to her husband because she didn't do anything that would disqualify her as an adulteress to go back to her husband. Then the Mishnah continues, but if it was Nisus Abi Basin, which means one witness, and the Basin, so to say, authorized one witness to be accepted in this situation, then Tetze, then the din is, as the Tanakhama said, that she's not allowed to stay with either the first or the second husband, Upaturmin a carbon, but she doesn't have to bring a carbon chattas, because after all, she did commit adultery, albeit unintentionally, but she doesn't bring a carbon chattas. However, Lo Nisus Abi Basin, if there were two witnesses, and therefore she didn't need Beis Din, and she got married to the second husband based upon these two witnesses, and then it turns out her first husband was alive, so again, Tetze, the din applies, she has to leave her new husband. But since she, of course, did this with the two witnesses, so she's, as we just said, considered a shogeges, and therefore could return to her first husband. But in this situation, v'chayevis b'korban, but she would be obligated to bring a korban chatas for having had an adulterous relationship by accident with the second husband, because she mistakenly thought that her first husband was dead. Interestingly, the Mishnah points out, you see here, Yafakoch based in Shapotra min HaKorban. The fact that she went out with only one witness is based upon the strength of Beis Din, and it doesn't require her to bring a Karma Chattis in that situation, so the Koyach of Beis Din, so to say, is stronger than the Etzem Din, because the Etzem Din would require her to bring a Chattis, but if she went out because of the Koyach Beis Din with the Eid Echad, so then she's Potter from a Chattis, Peturim min a Chattis.
Finally, the Mishnah concludes and says, Harua basically nasei, in a situation where the basin gave her permission to go and marry, in other words, it was only one witness, v'holcha v'kilkala, but basin said she could get married to somebody else, but didn't say she could be promiscuous with somebody else, so for Rachmana Litzlan, she had relations outside of marriage with somebody else. In that situation, Beis Din's p'tur of a korban, chatas, in this situation doesn't apply, and chayevis b'korban, the woman being chayevis in a korban for having an adulterous relationship that wasn't under the sanction of Beis Din, because shelo yitru elin yasei. When Beis Din gave her permission to go and get married, it was to go and get married, not to go and have relations. So therefore, any relations she has outside of marriage would be, in fact, a shogeg, adulterous relationship that would, in fact, require her to bring a korban chatas. Okay, we said a lot in the Mishnah, now let's start to Gemara. Gemara says, Midiktani Seifa, the end of the Mishnah said, Nisei Shelo Bershus Muteres Lachzalo, if she went and got married with two Edim, then she's allowed to go back to her first husband. That implies only Shelo Bershus based in El Biedim, that there were two witnesses. That implication, therefore, for the Reisha is that the Reisha was talking about one witness, as we've already mentioned. The Chal the Reisha Bershus based in, because it was only one witness. Ubeid Echad, Alma, you see from here a very important idea that a single witness is believed to allow the woman to get married. A single witness is believed that her husband died. And this is in accord with the Mishnah that we're going to learn later in the Masechta. We allowed a woman to go and get remarried based upon even hearsay evidence of one witness telling another witness, which normally would not be acceptable in court. But if Reuven comes to the court and he says, Shimon told me that her husband died, we would accept that. Again, this is based upon the principle that Isha Daika Umintzeva, that she's going to just not get married based upon that one witness, but she's going to really check it out. And, of course, if she could get two witnesses that can prove it, that would be the perfect checking it out. But here, she's going to dig and dig and dig to make sure that the witness is telling the truth. And likewise, we would accept the Isha Mipi Isha, even hearsay evidence from one woman saying that another woman told her. And even the Isha would be Eved, would be Shivcha. And even if the woman is telling us that she heard it from a male or a female servant, that would be adequate because Chachamim, again, wanted to prevent her from being an Aguna. And at the same time, they didn't want the Chas V'Shalom get married without definitive knowledge that her first husband was dead. So they made a big kula because of Aguna, so she shouldn't be Aguna, but at the same time, they put in a big Chumrah of Daika Uminsuba, that she must check it out real well. Again, the bottom line from all of this, Alma Eid Echod Mehemen. We see that a single witness is believed. And this is in accord with the Mishnah in Krisus as well. Utana Nami, we learned in the Mishnah in Krisus, Eid Echod Omer, Achalto Chaylev, Vu Omer Lo Achalti. One witness comes along and said that the person ate Chaylev by accident. And the person himself says, no, that definitely wasn't Chaylev. That was perfectly kosher Shuman. That was perfectly kosher Abasar, Potter. He doesn't bring a Karm Chatus. Now, why? Taima the Omer Lo Achalti. It's because he contradicted the witness. The one witness said, you ate Chaylev, and he said, no, I did not. So therefore, he doesn't bring a korban chatos. Implication being, ha'ishtik, if he had been silent and hadn't said anything, so then mehemen, we would believe the single witness. What do you see? Alma eid echod mehemen. You see that an eid echod is nemon to go and make a person bring a korban chatos. So Gemara says, how do we know this is a din d'oraisa? Bringing korban chatos, you're obligated mid d'oraisa to bring this korban chatos. How do we know? Mid d'oraisa mi nolan, that one witness is accepted. So we're going to go through a proof right now that we're going to eventually reject, but it's a long proof till the end of today's shir. The Tanya. Ohoda elov chatoso. The pasuk tells us that if he becomes aware that he had done a sin, so then he has to bring korban chatos. It was the right type of a sin that brings the korban chatos, but not the lo sheyidu acherim, and not that other people told him that he did this sin. Now, what does it mean that other people told him? Yochel afal bisha eno machisha potter. One might have thought afal bisha eno machisha. Even if he doesn't contradict them, ye potter. Because he doesn't know independently himself. Even two witnesses come and say, you did this sin that would require chatas. And even though he doesn't contradict them, you might have thought that he should be potter because it doesn't say that he knows on his own. No, that's what it means. Tambalomar, ohodai love, mikol makom. That means if two witnesses come and tell him, then he would have to go and, in fact, bring a chatas. Now, what are we talking about? Hechidami. I already explained it, but now we'll see it inside. Ilemod, the osu trei velo komachashluhu. If you're talking about two witnesses come and he doesn't argue with them, he doesn't have independent knowledge that they're wrong, so crawl lomeli. Why would he need a pasuk? We always follow two witnesses. So mustn't the pasuk be talking about el olav chad, that one witness comes along, and as long as he doesn't contradict this witness, he doesn't say, ani lo achalti, but he says, I don't know. So el olav chad, v'ki lo kol ma'achish le mehemen. And if he doesn't contradict the witness, then we do believe him. What do you see? Shema minor. We see from here that eid echod is neman. So therefore, that's the proof midoraisa. Gemara says, who says? We might be Mishum de Mehemon. Who says it's because he's believed the Eid Echad that that's why he brings a Chatas? Maybe it's Dilma Mishum de Koshasik Ushtiko Kyodadamya. Maybe the fact that he didn't say anything means that he knows that he really ate the Chaleb now. And therefore, that's why he has to bring a Chatas, because now he knows, not because we believe the Eid Echad. And the Gemara says, Tate, I'll show you that this is right. Because look, the Ketani Sefer, that Mishnah increases said at the end of it, when two witnesses come along and says, you ate chalev. And he says, I did not eat chalev. He knows for sure he didn't eat chalev. Then in fact, he's potter for bringing korban chatos. Albeit, Rav Meir Mechayev. Rav Meir says he's chayev. And Rav Meir says the following kavachomer. Amar Rav Meir kavachomer. Im heviyu shnayim l'dei misul chamura, lo yviyu l'dei korban akal. If two witnesses come along and say, you killed so-and-so, and he's screaming up and down, no, I didn't, we still would put him to death. So certainly, when two witnesses come and say that he has to bring a korban chatos, how could he possibly argue with that and say, no, I don't have to? So what did the Chacham say back to Rav Meir? Amulo. The Chacham said back to Rav Meir, my mitzvah lomar meizah leisi. No, because here there's another out. He could have said, you're right, I ate it, but I ate it on purpose. And a person who does isser that would be chayv a chatas by accident doesn't bring a chatas if he did the isser on purpose. So what do we see from here? From the fact that Rav Meir and the Chacham only argue on the case of the two witnesses, Reisha, and we turn to Peches and Aleph, where they're talking about one witness, my time kom chayv rabbanim. Why did Chachamim say that you're chayv? If you're telling me that we believe the single witness, that can't be right, because in general, when two witnesses come, even though the other litigant disagrees with them, but the two witnesses come, and we follow the two witnesses. So, inhu mehemni, we believe the witnesses. Nevertheless, in this situation, when the two witnesses come and say that he's eating chalev, and he says, I didn't. We don't believe the two witnesses. Ella, what must it be? Ella, mishum de'ishtik. The reason why is, in general, is because he was silent. And shtika keodo damya. And that's why we believe the two witnesses, and likewise, why we believe the one witness. But it has nothing to do with eid echod neman. It's because shtika keodo damya, and therefore, this is not the proof that we're looking for. And therefore, you can't say from here, eid echod neman as a deraisa source, and the Gemara Mitzvah Shem tomorrow will pick up with a different reasoning for why eid echod is neman. With this, we conclude today's shiur.